You are now entering the Ron and Brian Coronavirus Bunker.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 96 of the Ron and Brian Podcast. I'm Ron, as always, joined by the head elevator usher at Madison Square Garden, Brian. Brian, how goes it this evening, sir?
It goes well. The famous Chinese proverb said, may you live in interesting times. And I'm going to tell you something, Ron. This past week, I would have to say we saw some very interesting current events going on. Lots to talk about this week.
Nah, no question. So let's get things started with a nice drink.
Drink of the week.
Na zdrowie.
Salud.
Salud.
Drink of the week.
Sláinte.
Prost.
Drink of the week.
So democracy taking hold, not just in South Carolina, not just on Super Tuesday, but in the Ron and Brian Drink of the Week poll as well. A very decisive and conclusive winner this past week from White Elm Brewing. Eh? I think it's supposed to be like a Canada homage, so I guess eh. Because it talks about getting a double-double at Timmy Hortons on the can. So that's why I assume that's what this is supposed to be. This is a stout made with maple syrup, cold-brewed coffee, and lactose.
Wait a second. You know I'm lactose intolerant,
well,
right?
Well, you are, you're going to have an issue later on in this episode.
But I have to drink it.
The people have voted. And I'll take a sip first here.
All right, because I'm a little concerned. Mm. I'm a little concerned that I will explode my drawers.
I mean, listen, you gotta make sacrifices for the podcast. It's not bad. I'm not gonna lie.
Okay, not bad is that's Tavor, the nice people at Tavor when they said that they were going to curate the Ron and Brian Drink of the Week poll. They did not tell us that it was going to be not bad. They said that it was going to be some of their most delicious tastings that they offer.
Well, have a sip there. I think my issue might be, I don't know if this is necessarily as cold as it should be. Hopefully you have a properly chilled can there and can tell me your thoughts on it.
There's a lot going on here.
It's
the
complex
flavor profile.
Mm-hmm.
There's a somewhat sweetness. You definitely taste the cold brewed coffee. I don't feel like I'm drinking a beer here.
Okay, what do you think you're drinking?
I feel like I am drinking an iced coffee with a little honey in it.
And that's kind of, I think, the angle they're going for. So it sounds like they nailed it. I just need to refrigerate this a little bit more, clearly. But I like it even a little bit warmed up.
What was, any reason why it's not refrigerated?
I mean, might be having an issue with the beer fridge. Got to look into that a little bit. You obviously need to
have a
well-functioning beer fridge. So anyway, overnight celebrity losing for 2 weeks in a row now, becoming the vodka gimlet of the drink of the week. We will have to put it up again against another beer this upcoming week. See if it can get off the schneid, as Chris Berman would say. So check out our Facebook page. We'll have that drink of the week poll up shortly. Brian, any thoughts on next week's drink?
I think next week's drink, obviously, the one thing that Ron and Brian here, we do not discourage quitting. You know, we believe in persistence. We believe in staying the course, 1,000 points of light. Overnight Celebrity will be back next week. I'm looking at quite possibly a mocha vanilla stout.
Mm.
If the voting public crushed Overnight Celebrity with I think Mocha Vanilla Stout from 903 Brewers is going to duplicate those efforts. But you want to know something? We Don't Give a Fuck. Overnight Celebrity will be back.
Okay. Look forward to it. Now, normally this would be when we roll into This Week in Racism, but yet again, not a lot of top-notch racism this past week. Clearly, people too concerned about the coronavirus to hate one another, so I would be remiss if I didn't tee this up and say that Hans Berglund on the bench one more week till we find him some competition. Brian, thoughts?
Listen, I you know, we're just going to go, we're just going to say that, you know, Racist of the Week is something that really brought this whole podcast together. And the thing that made, that really elevated this segment over others is the fact that we bought incredible, absolutely incredible racists. And the fact that Hans Gruber continues scaring away all competitors, nobody's even willing to get into the ring. I mean, I think we're, you know, when he sat there and said to his Uber driver, "I am an exceptional thief, Mrs. McLean, and since I'm moving up to kidnapping, you should be more polite." I mean, we all sat there and said, holy cow, we're not going to have any more racism this week.
All right. Well, welcome to the party, everybody else. In the meantime, keep an eye out. Let us know about the racism you see in your area, especially that with good audio and video to go along with it. In the meantime, let's beef it out.
Ron and Brian's Beef of the Week.
Ryan, what's bothering you this week?
The stock market.
Is it?
The irrational stock market that is going on this week. I think as two savvy people like you and I, and I know we're going to have really angry money later, mm-hmm. I'm looking very much forward to hearing the career advice, the life advice that you're going to be offering later. Maybe this is something that we will bring up and you'll explain. So maybe if I'm addressing something that you've got planned, but what is bothering me is over the past week, the yo-yo of stock market results on a daily basis, up 4 points, down three, up two, down four. It is just a seesaw of emotions going on. My 401k, my retirement, I am seeing literally ups and downs that are making me very uncomfortable. I'm along for the ride. And what I don't understand about the stock market, today it lost over 1,000 points of light, is that how can something yesterday that drove the market up over 2.5% today knock it down over 4%, when really nothing happened today in this world that was not expected yesterday?
Well, I think the confusion is some days you have people, they go out to work and they're
buy, buy, buy!
And then other days they go in and it's
sell, sell, sell.
So, you know, it's definitely very up and down. As you mentioned, we will speak about that more during Really Angry Money later on. I will try and bring you back down to earth, hopefully calm your nerves and give you some good advice.
I would appreciate that greatly.
I will do what I can. My beef this week, Brian, is the coronavirus panic. And I think it's officially become a panic. I think it's people are getting a little out of control with all this, to the point that it's impacting the stock market. It's impacting my industry. It's impacting a number of industries out there. You know, we have people just literally had someone this week that wanted to cancel a meeting in Philadelphia because one person in New York State had been diagnosed with coronavirus. Now, granted, that person had been to Iran, where they lick the fences outside of places of worship because they feel that will help with the coronavirus, but somehow this person getting on a train in New York City, coming to Philadelphia, was somehow going to come in contact with the coronavirus. We've kind of spoken about this last week regarding the death rates, and again, I am not going to say that the coronavirus isn't something to be taken seriously. You know, you should obviously take precautions. You should try to avoid getting sick. But as far as a death rate, you know, it is still significantly lower than, you know, the flu. It is still lower than homicide. I mean, you go outside your house, you're 10 times more likely to have somebody just kill you than have coronavirus mm-hmm. kill you. So, I mean, for people to be saying, well, I just can't leave the house, I can't go into public places. Like, anytime you go anywhere, I mean, hell, even sitting in your house is a risk at times. I just feel it's getting overblown. You know, you mentioned it before the podcast. You can't find a Clorox wipe anywhere in the city.
Nope.
We were trying to order Purell at work today for it to have stocked for the employees. That's back ordered till who knows when. People are selling them for, you know, set bottles of 10 for $400 on eBay. It's absolutely ridiculous.
And the thing being is the fact that, you know, this coronavirus, keep in mind, you know, I cannot predict what is going to happen, but we're recording this on the night of March 13th. And what I'm saying is the fact that it is, you know, it is very similar to the flu. It is very similar to, you know, a severe cold. Yes, people will die from it. People are dying from it. But people are dying from other diseases as well. The death rate of this is, I think they said, 3%.
Well, the WHO...
SARS was over 10.
WHO said it was 3.4%. President Trump, however, has a hunch that it's less than that.
Oh, well, listen, we know that he's got to listen. Nobody knows science like he does. He knows science.
And if you even if you have a little touch of coronavirus, according to the president, you can still go to work.
Oh, of course. It's fucking frightening me that man is our president right now. But the point is the fact that, you know, yes, there is a new disease that has not been recorded by modern science. They do not have a cure for it. They don't have a vaccine to fight it. But I think the level of panic that is going on right now it's irrational.
Sure. And
you know, and I'm going to say this, and this is the part that actually bothers me to verbalize. But it's, you know, the media is literally hyping this because they want to get eyeballs because this is a newsworthy subject. But there are genuine repercussions to the fear that they're putting out there.
Well, yeah, you see that again. We see that in the stock market. I will tell you, you know, every hotel that I assist with is now looking at contingency plans for cutting costs, cutting payroll, because of the anticipation of the drop in travel in the upcoming months. You know, these are people's lives that are being impacted over, you know, again, something that should be taken seriously, but not to the extent that it is.
You've got, I think I read a statistic earlier today that the airline industry is expecting somewhere, I think they said about $115 billion of lost revenue.
That sounds about
keep
right.
Keep in mind, I have nothing but disdain for the airline industry. That might change if I were baller enough to fly private.
Well, and you look at, you know, if the airline is losing that money, who is that going to impact? It's not going to impact the CEO. It's not going to impact the shareholders. It's going to impact the people that, you know, depend on flights taking off to get paid. The pilots, the baggage handlers, you know, flight attendants, all that are going to be impacted first. Same thing with hotels. The people that get impacted the first, housekeepers, servers, front desk staff, you know, across the board. So I'm even seeing now that there is a record low in oil consumption around the world right now because of how much, I guess, what's the word I'm looking for? Like China being completely shut down. There's less, yes, no, there's less pollution over China. You can actually see the skies in China. But the funny thing is as oil usage goes down, the price of oil is just going to go up. So you're going to see that reflected very shortly in the price you pay for gas at the pump soon as well.
Yeah, it's fucking scary. I mean, it's the fear that is going on, the economic impact, the disruption that this virus has caused is really out of proportion to the threat that it ought. Like AIDS was so much worse.
Yeah. Now, there is two things I've seen online that I will agree with is, you know, one person made the comment that one thing this coronavirus pandemic shows is that we as a society are only as safe as the least protected people in it. So you have all these people without health insurance. They're the ones most at risk. They can't afford to get tested for coronavirus. So where you and I might have good health care, it doesn't matter if we're around 200 people that don't have, you know, the health care coverage to be taken care of when they're sick. The other part of that is just sick time. You know, how many mm-hmm. businesses, you know, don't give employees proper sick time, so they have to go to work when they're sick? Or even if you do call out sick, you know, how many bosses are of the mindset of, well, are you really sick or could you come in today? Like, calling out sick is frowned upon, but it's something that should be more accepted in the workplace because, again, I don't want somebody, regardless of whether it's coronavirus, flu, stomach bug, whatever, I don't want someone coming to work when they're sick and possibly spreading it around the office.
Not to humble brag here, but I participated in a webinar earlier today that was put on by the Society for Human Resources Management.
Would that be SHRM?
Yes. And one of the things that they said was that they would not be surprised if the one of the permanent results of this coronavirus scare is that we take a different approach to doing business, and that we are going to you come in under all circumstances type of work environment is going to be revisited, because now we actually kind of as a culture are going to start to see what you know, what the reason for not having sick employees come to work. You know, like you said earlier, your most of your fast food employees, they don't get sick time. You're going to get somebody coming in to make your Chick-fil-A. They're coughing up in all over your nuggets. And, you know, that's not the first time I've had somebody cough all over my nuggets, but that was back in college. But also, in addition to that, is just the fact that they're expecting that business travel will be cut down permanently, that business trips are going to start to, you know, it's not going to be, you know, a glorious luxury anymore. It's going to be much more on an as needed basis, as well as they say they are saying that they would not be surprised if telecommuting from home, working from home starts to become a concept that is more embraced by the American work culture. You know, there are other societies, Europe, Asia, where these types of things are seen as a legitimate alternative to going into the workplace. In America, we don't really see that. It's wake up, shower, have breakfast, kiss the wife goodbye, tell the kids to get on the school bus, and then you go off for work for the day. There may be some permanent changes that come out as a result of this.
Sure. Well, and we're, you know, in the hotel industry, we're already seeing some very short-term changes. We've got companies that have canceled all travel for the month of March. We've had companies that have canceled international travel. There is a major consultant company that, you know, restricted travel. If there was any meeting scheduled with 30 or more attendees of their employee of their company, they were going to cancel those. If an employee was going to an outside meeting of 100 attendees or more, they weren't going to be allowed to attend. So, I mean, some of these companies are putting some very strict restrictions on their employees to, you know, to protect their employees, because they don't want to get their employees sick, and I'm sure they don't want to take on the liability of getting their employees sick. But yeah, this could have some very long-term repercussions. And I think going back to the sick leave for a minute, I'm not only going to blame the businesses, but I think some of the blame also needs to be shouldered by the average consumer. Because, you know, what average consumer is willing to wait a couple more minutes for a burger because a restaurant's understaffed because someone had to call out sick? You know, who's not going to go down and yell at a front desk employee at a hotel because your room didn't get made up the way you wanted to because they had people out sick and they were understaffed? Like, I think the average consumer mindset, when in retail, food and beverage, whatever, you know, also drives the mindset that people can't be out sick. We need to be fully staffed. We can't run shorthanded. I'm not stepping off on that, Brian. I'm blaming society.
It almost sounds like you are monkeying the approach that I almost feel like I'm interviewing Bernie Sanders right now. You know, I'm just saying that, you know, the run that I started this podcast with almost 2 years ago, he was a capitalist. He sat there and saw things from the business perspective. He saw things from the business owner's perspective. Work needs to get done. Profit needs to be made for this machinery to continue. And now it's almost like I'm hearing that profit is not the most important thing in your worldview, and it's concerning me.
Well, I will try and get back on the straight and narrow for you. Speaking of Bernie Sanders, that, of course, brings us into everything that happened in the political world this past week and what a difference a week can make. Who is our front runner now?
If you agree with me, go to Joe30330 and help me in this fight.
I mean, here was a guy who we mocked openly after Iowa,
openly
after New Hampshire, you know, looked ugly. But then Saturday, South Carolina had the performance that we had been saying he needed to have. He needed to win the state big. He did that. Then we see Tom Steyer goes away. Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg both drop out, both put their support behind Joe Biden. And Joe cleaned up on Super Tuesday. I mean, just won
cleaned
some
it.
States.
Ran the slate.
Yeah, I mean, so Bernie took Vermont, which was expected. It looks like he'll take a number of the delegates in California. California is painfully slow in counting their votes, so we're probably not going to know, for a couple of weeks how their delegate count is going to shake out. But some definite surprises along the way. Yes, you have a question?
Why cannot California figure out how what the results were in a more reasonable time frame? And at the same time, my question is, why is California not a take it all, you know, winner takes all system?
Well, in the primaries, I don't believe there is any winner take all. It is split based. So basically any candidate that gets above 15% of the vote will then split that delegates of that state based on their percentage of the vote. So that's
true for every state?
I believe so. So I believe really? That's okay. What we're waiting for in California is, you know, Bernie could have a potential big win in California, but if it turns out that Bloomberg and Warren got over 15%, then that would, you know, potentially cut his delegate count in half. But again, Joe Biden has a lot of Joe-mentum, as they've been saying. Bernie, giving up any ground, saying that he is in it to win it. He will be in it straight through to the convention. I think the most surprising thing to me is, you know, Joe Biden won states that he didn't have a ground game in, he didn't spend money in, and for a number of them, didn't even go to prior to the primaries.
Why do you think that was?
You know, I think, again, a number of people, I think it was about a quarter, somewhere between a quarter and a third of people in exit polls didn't decide who they were voting for until within 48 hours of the election. So I think,
really?
I think seeing that South Carolina performance, I think seeing, you know, the support he started to get, not just from Klobuchar and Buttigieg, you know, Beto O'Rourke came out and supported him. Some other folks came out and supported him. I think people saw that and they started to once again think, all right, here's a guy that can win the nomination. Here's a guy that can beat Donald Trump. The youth vote did not turn out as Bernie expected or would have liked. I mean, voting numbers were up. If you look at Virginia, for example, they almost doubled the voters that turned up for the primary in 2016, and Biden carried the state. Biden carried Massachusetts, which was a shock. Bernie had been a 78% favorite the week prior to win Massachusetts, and he came in second.
My question is this, do you believe, and I think you follow these things a little bit closer than I do, but it clearly seems to be a ploy by the Democratic Party establishment that they were, and this is the way I see it. You tell me if this is a reasonable viewpoint, but it felt like the establishment got nervous with the momentum that Bernie was having.
I don't think there's any question of that.
And in a very short period of time, Pete Buttigieg gives up. What's her face? Amy Klobuchar gives up. Bloomberg gives up and immediately sidles up to Joe Biden.
Yeah, I think you will see, you know, I'm sure as always happens in politics, you know, there were promises made. I'm sure, you know, Pete Buttigieg will probably run for governor of Indiana. I think you will see the DNC back him. I think when Amy Klobuchar is up for re-election, she'll get a lot of support. I'm sure there were deals made, is the point being. There was a lot of talk that Mike Bloomberg was pressured on Super Tuesday to drop out, which he did the following day. Again, only able to carry American Samoa and get 6 delegates. I think it worked out to it cost him about $77 million per delegate. So not a great showing there.
Jesus.
And then today we lost Liz Warren, who had such a great showing at the debate a few weeks back, but again couldn't carry any states, couldn't even carry her home state. Came in third in Massachusetts behind Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders. Brian,
oh no,
Brian! Please tell me I don't have to get that.
Ron, you do not have to open that
right,
door.
Hold on, maybe it's the fridge repair man. Hold on.
Nope. No.
Ah, oh, shit. Senator Warren, you're back.
I'm back again, boys. Out of the race and in your faces.
Jesus. I mean, I added extra security. How are you always getting in here?
Security can't stop me. Nothing can stop me. Except for misogyny and the mainstream media.
All right, that's fair enough. I'll give you that. You seem a little out of sorts tonight.
I've been playing a little drinking game. Every time one of you says something stupid, I take a drink. So I'm pretty lit.
Okay, well, I mean, I guess after dropping out of the race, you know, we can certainly understand that.
I may be out of the presidential race, but I'll still be stalking Bloomberg. He's not out of my crosshairs yet.
Well, wait a second. Mike Bloomberg, I'm sorry, Senator Warren, but I think Mike Bloomberg he really put his best foot forward. I think that he had a rough week, and maybe you want to take it easy on him right now.
You're in New York City too, aren't you, Brian? Play nice, or I'll toss a pipe bomb in your window.
Ooh.
Damn.
She's going to... What is this, 1976? I don't know. Well, Senator Warren, as we were just mentioning, poor showing across the board. Couldn't carry your home state, coming in third. Your thoughts on your fellow citizens of Massachusetts?
Those mouth breathers in my state root for the Patriots and the Red Sox, so they don't know how to handle someone with integrity that follows the rules.
All right, fair enough. But I assume you'll go back to leading them with professionalism and poise?
When I get back to Congress, I'll be introducing a bill that will allow me to sodomize any masshole I want with a plunger.
Whoa. Oh. All right, well, hopefully we see less of you in the future.
Don't forget, boys, I'm always watching. Bye, bitches.
Oof. It's, you know what I find interesting is that she's a multifaceted individual.
She is, yes.
She, you know, Senator Warren, the one that you see being interviewed on MSNBC, is very different than the Senator Warren that is, representing the state of Massachusetts in Congress. Very different than Senator Warren that was at the Democratic debates over the past few weeks. But the side that shows up to, you know, the Elizabeth Warren that basically breaks through your security and go and gets into your home it's the dangerous side of her.
I mean, I think that would be a safe thing to say. I'm a little frightened. I'm not gonna lie. She walks in the door, I pee a little bit.
Well, I think that happens when most women walk in the room,
true.
Don't you?
A little bit.
Right. Weren't we supposed to get physicals this year?
We were gonna get the anal probing to check the prostate and all that. I have a birthday on Saturday, so I'm sure it's probably time for me to get a physical. So I should probably reach out to my primary care doctor and set that up.
Are you implying that because it's your birthday on Saturday that you will get some prostate play?
I mean, if I ask nicely, one can only hope.
And if you pay your copay, of course.
Of course.
Absolutely. Any big birthday plans?
I'll probably just go have a few drinks, enjoy myself, relax a little bit, have a nice dinner, you know. Very low key.
Maybe a steak.
You know, it's not a big birthday this year. It's only 49. Next year at 50, maybe I'll do something a little bigger.
Do you dye your hair?
I do not. I am very fortunate to not have any gray hair.
Fuck out of here. How do you not have any gray hair at your
age? Listen, I take after my mother's side of the family, and her father did not start to go gray till he was like in his 70s. So I still have this luscious, full... Don't get me wrong. When my beard grows in, I got a lot of salt and pepper in my beard. So that's why I don't, you know, grow it in. That and the fact that I don't, you know, grow a beard that well. But yeah, you are a silver fox, my friend. Maybe you should hook up with a little of that Just for Men. It helps Walt Frazier. Or is that Clyde Frazier?
Clyde Frazier. I actually had dinner at Clyde Frazier's restaurant this week.
Really?
Yes.
And how was it?
Wasn't bad. Don't know that I would... go out of my way to go back there, but it was hyper convenient and it fit the bill perfectly.
Speaking of basketball, weren't you at the Barclay Center this week?
I am so proud of myself for going.
And why is that?
I am so, because it was Pride Night at the Barclay Center for the Brooklyn Nets game where they took on the visiting Memphis Grizzlies.
Oh, yes. A powerhouse, the Grizzlies.
A lot of the people that they brought onto the court during the game were supporting different Pride-related organizations, whether they would be LGBT or Q. Unfortunately, I would have to say that I was fucked at the game, because the Brooklyn Nets lost by over 30 points, and I had $20 on them laying a point and a half at home.
So you're saying that not only were there Grizzlies in the building, but there were Bears as well.
Oh.
Hey-o.
You know what? I will say this. I did not, I would say there was probably 5% of that crowd that was there specifically because it was Pride Night.
All right. Well, I was playing a little game, and you can tell me if I was correct or not. The game I was going in my head was the over-under on the amount of money that Brian spent on beer at the game. So I am putting the over-under at $39.50. And I am going with the over on that.
You would be correct. All right. I bought 3 rounds of 2 beers. I spent probably about, I think, $65.
Living large, my friend.
Listen, this coronavirus is going to wipe us all out, so I may as well go out on top. And if it makes you feel any better, that my beer of choice for the night was Corona.
Oh, right. Got to help them.
I am not part of that 38% of Americans that are not drinking Corona, because they think that they're going to catch the virus as a result of it. I was drinking Corona beers all night long. I will say it tasted just as it was barely like a beer. It's barely a beer. And you know what? There's a time and a place for it.
I remember, you know, the worst beer experience I had was seeing Roger Waters at Yankee Stadium many years ago. And the only beer that they really had available being brought through the crowd was Miller Lite. And I just remember paying $13 for a tall boy of Miller Lite. And it was the same as drinking a bottle of water.
That sounds like Yankee Stadium.
Because it was also hot. It was July. It was like so hot. So hot,
ooh,
Brian.
Yes.
But anyway, I digress.
Have we talked about you coming up to New York on a for a weekend game?
We still need to set a time for a Yankees game, and we also need to set a time for you to come down for a Phillies game. So let's do that. Let's take the follow it next week and look at some games. Maybe we can can come down for a Phillies Mets matchup at Citizens Bank Park. That might be good.
I would love that.
Right. Now, regardless, I have to imagine you had a better time at your basketball game this week than Spike Lee did at the Knicks game the other night. Just a bit of a kerfuffle.
What on earth happened? Obviously, the Knicks are having a rough time. They're having a rough go of things
just for the
lately.
Last 20 years.
And when
or
I
so.
Say, yeah, I was about to say it's been a while. But what the fuck is going on with them?
So, well, I mean, I think James Dolan is what's going on with them. Probably one of the worst team presidents in sports. But there apparently was an issue with Spike Lee going in the employee entrance versus the VIP entrance. He was going to the game on, I want to say, Wednesday, and was about to get on the elevator to get to his seat, because the floor level in Madison Square Garden is actually in the fifth floor of the building, so you actually have to go up to get to the floor level. And so a security guard stopped him and said, no, no, you're not supposed to come in here. You need to go back out. You need to go out to 33rd Street where you came in, walk around to 31st Street, and come back in the VIP entrance. Now, in the meantime, they had already scanned his ticket. So he's like, I'm not going back outside. I'm like, I know once I leave here, I can't get back in. And so eventually he got to his seat. James Dolan came and spoke with him. I don't know if they really resolved anything then, but I think the Knicks just kind of amped it up because they released a statement afterwards that said, quote, the idea that Spike Lee is a victim because we have repeatedly asked him to not use our employee entrance and instead use a dedicated VIP entrance, which is used by every other celebrity who enters the Garden, is laughable. It's disappointing that Spike would create this false controversy to perpetrate drama. He is welcome to come to the Garden anytime via the VIP or general entrance, just not through our employee entrance, which is what he and Jim Dolan agreed to last night when they shook hands. So clearly, the Knicks were not trying to de-escalate the situation any with that statement. Spike made the rounds of a lot of the sports talk shows and made the point, like, he's been going to these games, he's been using that entrance for 28 years. He had used that entrance earlier in the week to attend a performance of To Kill a Mockingbird that was going on at Madison Square Garden for local school kids. He's like, why all of a sudden the change, and why was I not informed of it? He said, if I miss my deposit for my season tickets, he's like, you guys call me the next day. If this supposedly happened, why don't you call me? And you know what he spends for his two floor seats?
I'm going to guess $200,000.
The number I heard was $300,000.
Yeah, for the Knicks.
Yep. And that's his point. He's like, I mean, is there anyone, players included, that is more synonymous with the Knicks at this point than Spike Lee?
Not at all. He is the Knicks fan base. Right. He is stuck it out. I think it's time that the Knicks start to see him as their inside man. I think they need to do the right thing for him. I feel like Spike has been bamboozled inside the town of Crooklyn, and he goes to those games, and he got game. And do I keep going?
I mean, I wanted to see if you I wanted to see how you were going to work either Malcolm X or a Black Klansman into your little rambling.
Neither.
There.
Neither. I was probably gonna try and end on Mo Better Blues, but I just kind of hit a wall.
I understand. I'm not a Spike Lee fan. In fact, I don't think I've seen a Spike Lee movie. I'm going to go out and say that.
Ever?
I don't believe I have.
Let's name. You never saw Do the Right Thing?
Did not.
Did you ever see Black Klansman?
No.
Malcolm X?
No.
Inside Man?
No. That was with Denzel Washington, right?
Oh, my God. That is a great movie.
Did not see it.
Oh, no. Highly recommend. All right. Jungle Fever?
No.
She's Gotta Have It?
Nope.
25th Hour, Ed Norton?
Nope.
Okay, write down Inside Man, right. 25th Hour.
Right.
Those are the two movies that you have to see. What about School Days?
No.
Bamboozled?
Nope.
Crooklyn?
Nope.
Mo Better Blues?
No.
Chi-Raq?
Now I think you could honestly just be throwing out random words right now, and I couldn't even tell you if there were Spike Lee movies or not.
Not done yet. He Got Game?
No.
Clockers?
No.
Four Little Girls?
No.
Old Boy?
Nope.
Summer of Sam?
When I tell you that I have not seen a Spike Lee movie, you have to trust me that I have not seen any Spike Lee movies. But regardless, I believe Spike Lee in this instance. Like, it seems like, why would he pick this fight? Like, James Dolan to me seems like a prick in the way that he's like, he had Charles Oakley arrested at a game one time. Like, he just seems like a complete asshole. And the other point that Spike Lee keeps making, which is a good point, is if he was not supposed to come in the entrance that he came in, why was someone there to scan his ticket?
And why was it? Why was there video footage of it? But I'm not done with the Spike Lee movies. Here are a couple more. I want to see okay. what you see. Have you ever seen Jada Fire is Squirt Woman 3?
I don't believe that's a Spike Lee movie.
Semen Demons 2.
Now I think you've gone off track. I think perhaps you're
what about
into
Breast Worship.
I have not.
The Load Warrior.
Anyway, let's move on, shall we?
Space Nuts.
But I will try and see Inside Man and 25th Hour.
Taboo 2.
Well, Brian, I think we have waited long enough to roll out this this new segment, Really Angry...
Tales from the Toilet.
Really Angry Money.
Oh, I've been looking forward to this.
I even got a little background music. Hold on, a little piano version.
Oh!
All right, well... As we have discussed previously, we need to try and educate people in ways that they can invest their money. No one wants to work the rest of their life. I barely want to work right now. And it's not just the top 1% that can make money on investments. So we'll be talking a bit about the stock market, and I'll be giving you some of my picks in ways that you can hopefully make some money in the coming months. As always, as we say, you know, playing the market, investing is just like gambling. Don't spend money that you can't afford to lose. In fact, I always like to say, just automatically assume you're going to lose money when you make an investment. And then you'll know if you want to make an investment or not. So, Brian, are you familiar with an app called Fundrise?
No.
So, that's Fundrise. So this is one that I got into last year. Basically, it allows you to invest in real estate. You can do so with an investment as low as $500. If you do invest $1,000, it does open up some more investment opportunities for you. And so basically what you do, it's a pretty simple process. You basically, you know, you tell the app, you know, how aggressive of an investor you want to be or how moderate of an investor you want to be, whether you're looking for dividends, whether you're looking for long-term growth, or whether you're looking for a combination. And then what they will do is they will split your money up based on what you're looking for and place your money into various real estate investment trusts that they have created to buy property, renovate property, loan money to construction projects for either debt or equity type positions. So it's kind of a cool looking app. And once you are in there, you can actually go in and look and see. So right now my money is split among 74 active projects, and you can actually scroll through, and Brian, I'll show you the app right here, how it actually will show you different projects on the screen of your phone that they're investing in.
Get out of here.
And so you can see what they're doing. Like, I'm in an apartment complex in Las Vegas. I'm in a commercial renovation in Los Angeles. So again, they do it one of two ways. If they do it as an equity deal, they will give you a range as a projected return. If they're doing it as a debt deal where they're just giving money at a loan, they'll give you whatever the interest rate's going to be. So they have typically ranged anywhere from 8% to 20% returns on an ongoing basis. It's been around for about 3 years now. So I've been in it about half a year. I would say I've seen about a 4.5% return so far. So not too bad. The returns, again, are going to depend on when they exit out of certain projects or when certain loan payments are being made. My only caution here is that this is not a very liquid investment. If you're going to take money out, you can only do so every quarter. But again, even if you get 4, 5, 6% annually, it's still a better return than just leaving money in a checking account or most savings accounts.
And that's your financial advice?
That is just, I wanted to start with that because that's a little...
I like that. No, it's interesting. So do you get to tell them where, you know, which properties, or you say, listen, this is my risk comfort level. And they say, okay, based on that, this is where we're going to put your money.
Right. That you tell them what your risk level is, and so they have a few different real estate investment trusts, a few different REITs. So like, I'm split between an East Coast REIT, a West Coast REIT, a Heartland REIT, and then they have two growth REITs. And so based on whichever investment trust you're in, the REIT invests in these properties.
When I hear that you've invested in East Coast and West Coast, it makes me think like we've gone back to 1994 and you have put at the same table Tupac and Suge Knight at the same, you know, right across from Biggie and Puff Daddy.
I mean, it's really, I feel like I've brought the country together and I've tied it in with the Heartland wreath.
In a way that you're profiting off of, like the true white man that you are.
Even better, even better. All right, well, let's talk. I like that. Let's talk stocks, because that's the big way to potentially make money. You know, because regardless, I mean, we've obviously had a pretty crazy week in the stock market this past week. That's why, you know, it's never a good idea to look at your 401k during a time like this, because that kind of investment is a long-term investment. So depending on how much money you have to spend, some of these stocks might be out of your range. So I have some high-end stocks and I have some inexpensive stocks. Let you decide what you want to do. Again, this is just some very novice advice, but I've made a few bucks so far in the stock market. You potentially could too. Because one good thing you can say about coronavirus, it drives down certain segments of the stock market. It gives people an opportunity to buy stocks at a reduced price that will probably just bounce back once, you know, this particular panic is over. So we're going to look at two industries real quick. We're going to look at the hotel industry and we're going to look at the cruise ship industry, because those are ones that have been hit extremely hard in the stock market since the coronavirus panic has happened. So as far as hotels, we're going to look at Intercontinental Hotel Group, trades under symbol IHG. If you've stayed at a Holiday Inn, a Holiday Inn Express, Crowne Plaza, those are all part of IHG. Their 50-week high was $71.02. Today, they're trading at $52.10. So you can get a $20 discount almost buying stocks with Intercontinental. Marriott International, obviously one of the largest hotel companies in the world. Big hit because of how vested they are in China. Their code is MAR. Their high, 52 weeks, $153.39. You can currently get their stock at $110.22. So that's about a 33% drop that they've experienced. Going out to Hilton, again, large international presence, 52-week high, $115.48. They're currently at $91.50. And then Hyatt, I'm going to throw in, not as much international, but still getting impact by the entire segment being down. Their 52-week high is $94.98. They're currently trading a little under $70.
So are you recommending that the hotel industry is a buy?
Buy, buy, buy!
That's what I'm saying. I think, you know, again, I think if you look at any of these stocks, any of these companies are going to rebound once this happens. They may not go back up to that 52-week high, but I think you could easily, you know, see a $5, $10, $15, $20 jump in these stocks once we get out of this coronavirus thing.
Ron, pick one of those hotel stocks. What is your recommendation?
I mean, honestly, if I were to pick one, I would probably take Marriott. You know, they are the most expensive, but they are also the one that I think has the potential of going even higher once the coronavirus scare is out. Now let's look cruise ships. We've got Royal Caribbean, 52-week high, $135.32, now trading at $66.40. Dropping more than 50% in value, a great buy. But these next three I really like because they're at more reasonable price points. You've got Norwegian Cruise Line, once up around $60, now selling around $29. Carnival Cruises has two companies that they actually operate out of. Both were around $58. One selling at $28 now, the other selling at $27. You know the cruise business is going to bounce back once people are willing to travel again. You could definitely, I think, double your money there.
Really?
Really, I think so.
Now, what period of time are you setting this for?
I think, you know, if you are looking at hotels and cruise ships, I think you need to be willing to roll for about 6 to 12 months.
Okay. I can do that.
Now, if you want some less expensive alternatives, I'm going over to the energy segment now. I've got two companies that I've been looking at. One is called Fuel Cell Energy. They do fuel cell power plant production and research. Their 52-week high was $3. They're currently sitting at $1.96. I think they're going to continue to go down. If you can grab that stock at about $1.75 or $1.50, I think you can turn that around and make a quick profit. And that's really where I think if you're a starting investor, trying to get these lower price stocks is a great way to do that. Because let's say you put out some cash, you get about two or three hundred shares of that stock. Even if it goes up $2 or $3, you know, you can pull $500-$600 out and increase your cash that you're gonna be able to invest with. Also, Plug Power. They provide alternative energy technology, hydrogen and fuel cell systems. Their previous high, $6.05. They're currently trading about $4.50. I like them if you can get them around $4 to $4.25.
So you're bullish on the stock market right now?
I am. It's a time to buy. Here, I'm going to give you some picks from my own portfolio that I think you could do well with. First one is Glu Mobile, GLU. They design, market, and sell mobile games. Some of them you might be familiar with are Diner Dash, WWE Adventures, and Tap Sports Baseball. Their high was around $12. I got in at 5.25, and they're currently at $7.10. I still think there's more money to be made there. Minerva Neurosciences, they are a clinical stage biopharmaceutical company. Their 52-week high was $9.56. I got in around $5. They're currently at $8.50. Again, I think there's still some upside there. What else do I have here? Oh, and this is one I'm huge on, my friend. This is one I'm going to tell you, Brian, to go out get this stock tomorrow. Pacific Drilling, PACD is the code. They provide global ultra deep water drilling services to the oil and gas industry. They recently lost a $320 million arbitration award to Samsung Heavy Industries, which just decimated their stock price. Their high was a little over $15. I got in around $4. They are currently trading at $1.23. And I think they are appealing that arbitration decision. I think they could easily jump back up into the $5, $6, $7 range long term if you feel like holding on to them. I don't see any reason why they won't eventually get back up to that $15, $16 range. I mean, it's oil and gas. It's drilling. That's not going away anytime soon. The only reason their stock is so low is because they have to pay this arbitration award out. So obviously that's going to impact their profitability. But again, you get yourself a couple hundred shares at $1.25, you can make yourself some money. Any questions, Brian?
No, I'm good.
You're good? You sure?
I think the level of detail that you just went in was rather impressive.
All right. Well, thank you. I just like this music. I don't know why. I didn't even get to use a lot of my my Really Angry Money sound effects.
If it makes you feel better.
Yes.
I just bought 25 shares of Pacific Drilling.
Just 25?
Well, that was my balance in my Charles Schwab account.
Yeah, speaking of which.
$37.
Speaking of which, I know so, I had a...
Oh, no. Hold okay. on a second. Right. If you're going to eat crow, I'm going to make you eat crow, okay?
All right.
Earlier this week, you and I were talking about a variety of different investment options.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
And I decided to let you in a little bit on my financial situation. And I was actually quite proud to let you know that I use Charles Schwab to manage my investments. And I believe your phrase was, okay, boomer, because there isn't a cool app that does fun things. And I questioned you on what app you use to buy your stock. And you sat there and you named something. Was it Bobbin Good? Was it Flobbin Schmud? No, I just. Oh, yeah. It was an app called Robin Hood.
That was.
You said is where you like to, that you trust your investment income. And one of the things that you said earlier, which I think is actually very important, all joking aside, which is that if you are going to invest money in the stock market, regardless of the volatility of the current financial environment, you have to accept that that money is going to be at risk.
Yes.
In an uncontrollable way. You can't sit there and use your rent money. This is not like taking the Greyhound down to Atlantic City and daddy's going to pay the bills. How is your Robinhood app this past week?
So Robinhood definitely had some issues on Tuesday and Wednesday this week.
Yes.
Due to the high volume of trades. Their system went down on Tuesday, was pretty much down for the entire day, could not do any trading while the market was open. Similar situation on Wednesday. They were down only for about 4 or 5 hours at that point, but still not a good look for them. So I have found an alternate brokerage that I have set up an account with, and will be shifting my stocks out of the Robinhood platform very shortly.
And the name of this brokerage that you're going for?
I will be going with TD Ameritrade moving forward.
Okay.
And again,
all right.
Not that I have an issue with Robinhood's app going down. It's not like I need the ability to trade on a daily basis. But I feel for having been down for a day and a half, that will be the death knell for that company. I think the number of class action suits that will probably be coming out against them by their traders will probably decimate the company.
Well, I think it boils down to the fact that when their customers depended on them to be able to access their investments and make changes, Robinhood was not there.
No. And especially on Tuesday, because the market had really tanked on Monday. And again, if you were going to buy, Tuesday was the day to buy. And you had individuals that had their money tied up in Robinhood that could not make those investments.
And then Tuesday, when they triumphantly announced that their systems were back online, immediately went right back out of commission. And what I thought was interesting was that they immediately said, this is not a result of a hack.
Right. They said all your personal information was safe, but still.
But it was an admittance on their part of our system stick.
Yes.
Which I thought was refreshing. To hear from a company.
I mean, nice of them to take accountability, but again, not nice enough where I feel comfortable having my investments tied up with them.
Understood. I will stick with my OK Boomer because I am happy with my money in Charles Schwab. You know where I'm not happy with my money?
Where's that?
With James Lipton. That man owes me $500 right now.
And
I don't think I'm collecting, Ron.
I don't think you're going to. Former Inside the Actors Studio host, dead at 93. Didn't look 93. I will give him that much. I mean, I know he dyed his hair and his beard, but still, looked like a man in his 70s or 80s.
Yeah. How old was he?
93.
Jesus.
Passed away.
I would imagine that there is... I would imagine that there was some plastic surgery that went on there.
Very possibly. I didn't realize he had been an actor previously.
Yes, absolutely. I did not realize that James Lipton was an actual human being. I thought it was a character that Will Ferrell had written for Saturday Night Live.
So you thought he was just completely made up?
No, I actually remember watching Inside the Actors Studio with my mom when I was when it was on TV. She loved that show. I can never understand why.
Yeah, it was not something never caught my attention when it was on. And I got real tired of hearing, hey, do you know Bradley Cooper had been in the audience at one point? And then he was on the show?
I think that that show, I think for the, it was very, the market for that show is very specific.
Yes.
It was for actors. It was for people that loved the art of acting. Somebody who was interested in Bradley Cooper as a person, I don't know that they walked away with a lot, listening to him talk for an hour about, his method, how he becomes the character. I think it was a lot of eye rolling. But I mean, at least in my head,
a very broad career that he had. I mean, he was a soap opera actor. He did some radio work back in those days. I believe he was on the Lone Ranger show on the radio. He wrote lyrics for the 1962 Broadway musical Nowhere to Go But Up, and the 1967 musical Sherry. Published books. Also published a novel called Mirrors, which was later turned into an NBC TV movie. So a real Renaissance man when you look at it.
Go figure.
I mean, go figure. That's right. And so he was the dean of the Actors Studio Program from 1994 to 2004, becoming the dean emeritus in 2005. Not quite sure what that means.
Well, that's what it means is that he's no longer like the working dean. He's more of just like, he holds an esteemed place within the organization, though his active duties are very limited. Yep. That is my understanding of emeritus.
Definitely a legend emeritus. Who we lost this week.
Eritrea.
Also lost a business legend this week.
No. There is no way that we are going to slide by a conversation about James Lipton.
Yes.
And you are not going to answer 10 questions.
All right, fine. By Francois Pivot.
How did you know?
I just had a feeling.
Okay.
All right.
Ron?
Yes.
What is your favorite word?
I'm going to go the Kiefer Sutherland route and say it's Greek, gravitas.
What does that mean?
I'm not quite sure, but it's Kiefer Sutherland's favorite word.
Ron, what is your least favorite word?
Coronavirus.
What turns you on?
Podcasting.
What turns you off?
A broken beer fridge.
What sound or noise do you love?
That's a good question.
Beer fridge?
A working
the
beer
fan
a
of
working
a
beer
fridge.
Fridge.
What sound or noise do you hate?
The alarm clock.
Ron, what is your favorite curse word?
Douchebag.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Firefighter.
What profession would you not like to do?
Podcaster.
If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
You were right the whole time.
Have you ever had a finger in your butt?
That I have not.
You're missing. All righty, there you go. That is our James Lipton's questions as answered by Ron.
All right. So again, moving on to our next celebrity death. Neutron Jack Welch, former CEO of General Electric between 1981 and 2001, passing away at the age of 84. Was a man who led the resurgence of General Electric, doing so at the expense of most of the United States employees employed by General Electric. Those of us that grew up in upstate New York certainly remember the downturn in our local economies as he shut down local plants because, hey, it was just cheaper to move those jobs overseas and down to Mexico. But hey, by 2006, his net worth was $720 million. So, fuck us, right?
He did pretty well in the grand scheme of things.
When he retired, he received a severance payment of $417 million. It's a little offensive.
No, honestly, the guy from WeWork walked away with a billion.
Oh, yeah. Well, but $417 million in 2001, I mean, adjusted for inflation, that has to be up there a bit.
I believe the term you're looking for, Ron, is buku cash.
Yes, I would say so. So Jack Welch, Godspeed. And then one last death this week, Joe Coulombe. Might not be a familiar name to you, but the markets that he founded are. He founded Trader Joe's Markets back in the day in California, passing away at 89 years old.
I didn't even know there was an actual guy named Joe.
So apparently he was running some sort of a drugstore chain back in the late 50s.
We all were. We all were back then. It was a crazy time.
But apparently when 7-Eleven made a push into Southern California in the 60s, he began transferring his stores into these Trader Joe's concepts, and made a fortune selling, you know, some lower cost items like his famous two-buck chuck wine that you could get for $1.99. And I didn't realize this. He had sold Trader Joe's to German grocery retailer Aldi back in 1979.
Get out of here.
I did not know that.
Do you know that I am freaked out by Aldi?
And why is that?
There's one right in my neighborhood.
Okay.
And I walked in once and I did not recognize any brands. Like, there was not one item where I could sit there and say, oh yeah, I could buy that in Key Food or Stop and Shop. Like, every brand was different.
If you if you go into an Aldi and you aren't prepared for it, it's a very disturbing experience.
It felt like Back to the Future.
So
where I woke up and everything looked like where it should be, but nothing was what I was expecting it to. And this is just classic how I handle situations that I'm not comfortable in. I turned around and walked away.
I mean,
like, I didn't even inquire. I didn't even sit there and go, well, you know, let me just buy a couple things. I just was like, yeah, I don't know this place. I turned around and left.
So, I mean, if you go, number one, bring a quarter, because you'll need a quarter to get a shopping cart because they're all locked up. Bring your own bags. They don't provide bags. And yeah, it's all off-brand stuff, but there are people who shop at Aldi's that swear by it. I mean, I get their flyer. It seems very reasonably priced, but yeah, I go in there and I just get a headache because it's just not laid out like any normal supermarket should be.
But it's laid out the way a normal supermarket should be. You've got your grocery aisle. You've got your pasta aisle with the sauce. You've got your canned vegetables and soups, like it's where, like, the cereals are the next aisle, the bread products are there, the soda, the juices. I mean, it's the same aisle structure, but there's not one product you look at and go, ooh, I like that one.
And,
like,
and maybe, like, that's the issue I have.
Like this brand.
Is I can't recognize a box or a bag of anything when I go in there. So it's probably my mind is thinking there's no organization here. There probably is. I just can't recognize anything when I walk in there.
And that is why I walked out once, never to return. True story, same thing with Trader Joe's.
Really?
Is that I walked into a Trader Joe's, I looked at the line, and I said, fuck that, I turned around.
I will say this, go to Trader Joe's during the week, because the weekend is an absolute shit show.
I know, and yet people swear by it.
Oh, yeah, I mean,
and the thing is, and this is something I just learned recently, is that the prices are very reasonable.
They're not crazy, and if you have not had the Trader Joe's orange chicken, you are missing out, my friend.
There is one. It's not necessarily within walking distance of me, but I passed several in the city. But I always thought of Trader Joe's as just a competitor of Whole Foods.
You would think that, but the pricing is more reasonable. The only thing I hate about Trader Joe's are the people that shop at Trader Joe's.
Oh my God, the number of, and this is what, this was at one point probably one of my beefs of the week, are people that shop at Trader Joe's and then carry the Trader Joe's paper bags with their groceries, like, for 18 miles just so that they can show everybody that they shop at Trader Joe's. I mean, that just, it's annoying.
I'm with you, my friend. All right. Well, we thank you all for joining us this week. That hour really flew by, but we thankfully got to most of what we want to talk about. We're going to jump on over to the Patreon now. Just remember that you can go to ronandbrianpodcast.com. In the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the link if you want to become a patron and support us. Also, that'll have all the links to our social media so that you can go on and vote for our drink of the week, or just communicate with us through Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or you can just even drop us an email or use our contact us form. Brian, anything else additional this week?
Stay safe. This, you know, the world is a different place than it was a week ago.
There you go.
See where we are from now.
Wash your hands. Don't touch your face, people.